Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Daniel Kataji, who is a professor of law at Ohio State University's Moritz College of Law and senior fellow of election law at Moritz. He recently was visiting professor of law at Harvard Law School. His area of expertise includes election law, civil rights, and federal courts. Welcome to Background Briefing, Daniel Kataji.
Thank you so much for having me.
And clearly there are plans afoot to change the rules in many of the states that in the last 2010 elections that the Republicans won the trifectas, both houses in the state houses and the governorships. In your state of Ohio, there are already moves afoot, are there not? And there's been some controversy over these in terms of changing the absentee ballot rules. So walk us through, because in broad strokes what's going on here is that these legislatures, Republicans in these legislatures, are trimming early voting days. They're making intensifying voter identification requirements, putting restrictions on absentee ballots. What's happening in Ohio?
Well, so this is part of a nationwide movement on the part of Republicans controlling state legislatures, in my view, to make it more difficult for people to vote and have their votes counted. Ohio is one of the states where we formerly had a Democratic governor as well as Democrats in control of one of our two chambers of the state legislature. Now the Republicans control everything, and they have recently adopted an election bill that, bottom line, makes it more difficult for people to vote early in absentee. And, of course, in the last presidential election, 2008, early voting in particular was heavily used by Democratic leading voters, especially by voters in the African American community. Now, early voting has been eliminated on the Friday, Saturday, and Sunday right before the, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday right before the election, which are the three most heavily used days. And we're seeing similar things in other swing states, including Florida, where they've made voter registration more difficult, as well as curbing early voting. Wisconsin, which has adopted a bill requiring government-issued photo ID. In states where Republicans now control the legislature, they're taking strong steps to make it more difficult to vote.
And in terms of the voter ID restrictions, Kansas, Wisconsin, South Carolina, Tennessee, and Texas have recently passed strict voter ID laws, and prior to that, of course, Georgia and Indiana required the voters to show an ID in order to have their votes counted.
Well, that's exactly right, and these are all states where Republicans now control the legislature, and they've enacted laws which require government-issued photo identification in order to vote. Roughly 11% of voters don't have that, and a disproportionate number of those people who don't have the required ID are poor people and people of color. So it's something that's going to have an especially harsh impact on Democratic-leaning groups of voters.
But it's sensibly being sold on the basis of fraud. Now, there's very few cases ever been brought, I believe, in terms of voter fraud. And in the states where they're imposing these restrictions, I don't imagine that situation is any different. So
yeah, and that's exactly right. I mean, there's only one very narrow kind of fraud that this law would actually prevent, and that is in-person voter impersonation fraud, someone going to the polling place pretending to be someone they are not. And in the rare instances where we actually do have voter fraud in this country, almost always done with absentee ballots, which stands to reason because you're less likely to get caught that way than you are actually going to the polls pretending to be someone you are not. So the problem that they're ostensibly trying to address is, for all practical purposes, non-existent. The only effect these laws are likely to have is to make it more difficult for certain groups, poor people, minorities, as well as elderly voters and college students to vote.
And what is the impediment there? Because, and again, they make it sound like it's reasonable, but it's actually quite mendacious and deliberately so. So what prevents poor people and students from getting this government-issued ID? So you're talking about state, because the states control elections. So
right. Now, I think for these laws to be upheld, they're going to have to provide the ID free of charge, as at least most of them do. But the problem is people still need money to get the underlying documents, like a birth certificate, especially if you're talking about a homeless person or someone who was born in another state that they have to send away, may cost them money. And that's effectively, in my view, a poll tax, because you're having to spend money as well as time in order to get the documents you need in order to vote and have your votes counted. Now, those kinds of burdens on the vote might be justified if there were, in fact, a real problem to be solved, but the evidence shows that they're not, that the problem that they're purportedly attempting to address, in-person voter impersonation fraud, is practically non-existent.
So, again, I'm speaking with Daniel Takagi, who is a professor of law at Ohio State University's Moritz College of Law and a senior fellow at Election Law at Moritz. He was recently a visiting professor of law at Harvard Law School. We're talking about across the country, newly elected Republican legislatures from the 2010 elections are changing elections laws in advance of the 2012 elections. And so we have 32 states and the District of Columbia where you can cast a ballot in person before election day, in other words, absentee ballots. There's a whole number of states now that are rolling back the voting time prior to the vote, the window at which you can place your absentee ballots. Florida, of course, just rolled back its early voting time from 1 week to 2, and of course that makes it difficult for groups like the League of Women Voters and the Boy Scouts of America and others to conduct their voter registration drives. So,
and they've also increased penalties, imposing them on groups that don't turn in forms within 48 hours. This caused the League of Women Voters to stop its voter registration activities in the state because of the possibility of potentially debilitating fines. People just, you know, make a mistake and don't turn them in within 48 hours.
So again, it's made to seem like it's a reasonable thing to do. Or what is that rationale? Because why do you have to restrict it from 2 weeks to 1? What arguments did they proffer?
Well, the arguments that they make first and foremost are reducing the cost. And I suppose the question is, what do we think the right to vote is worth? Do we think it is worth spending a relatively small amount of money, certainly when we look to other things like health care and the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan that our government has been spending money on? The amount that we spend for voting and our voting equipment and election administration in this country is minuscule when you compare it to those amounts. So, you know, my view is, even if it costs a slight bit more money, it's worth spending, and moreover, it's important to take the pressure off the polls on election day. In my state and a number of other states, we've seen, especially in presidential elections, long lines at the polls. Well, if we allow people to vote early, that will help take the pressure off the polling place on election day. And in fact, we did not see the kinds of huge lines in the last election, despite the fact that we had huge turnout, in part because we had voters making extensive use of early and absentee voting before election day.
So, Daniel Takagi, do you think that one of the reasons that people get away with this is that in the United States there isn't a kind of global knowledge of where the United States stands? I mean, after the 2000 fiasco in Florida, I think there was a kind of a wake-up call in terms of a lot of people suggesting that Florida was a kind of banana republic and this was very third world. Well, ironically, in a lot of countries in the third world, the voting systems are better run. I mean, next door in Mexico, for example, they're better run. Everybody has a voter ID card. There's no impediments in most countries, like registration itself.
Right. Well, that's exactly right. I was going to go to registration because, you know, you look at Canada, our neighbor to the north. Americans just tend to assume that our democracy is superior, but in many respects, it is not. Most notably, voter registration, where other states, other countries, rather, take affirmative steps to make sure that every eligible citizen is registered. So, Canada's registration rate far exceeds that of the United States, and as you would expect, their turnout rate does as well. And you know, other states have nonpartisan election administration. In the United States, it's really quite astounding that people with a direct state stake in the outcome. That is, elected officials who are elected as representatives of their party are actually running elections at the state level in the United States. People from other countries often think that this is extraordinary. It's an inherent and obvious conflict of interest.
So is there any possibility of educating the people, or does it go back to the kind of the days of the founding fathers, where the first concession that the federal government had to make to get the 13 colonies to join was that the states control elections? Because it is obviously a patchwork.
Yeah. I mean, it is what you might call an accident of history, the fact that we have this incredibly decentralized and partisan system of running elections in this country. What can you do about it? I mean, I do think it is something where you can actually make some improvements by educating the public. And in fact, we have had some areas in the last 10 years where we've seen improvements because of the Florida election and Bush versus Gore. I think our voting registration systems are better than they were 10 years ago. We lose fewer votes because we've gotten rid of punch cards. But, you know, it's a long, slow process. And what I will say on the more optimistic side is that voting rights are something which tends to galvanize people, especially progressives. And I wish that we'd seen more attention to this flurry of state laws that you described at the outset. You know, in addition to changing the rules according to which elections are run, we're now seeing moves in some states to gerrymander district lines, which are going to affect who gets elected to office for the next decade. And Pennsylvania, at least, is talking about changing its system for allocating electoral votes in a way that is likely to favor Republicans.
And we're going to be covering that in the next segment, as a matter of fact.
I do think that this is something where it is possible to mobilize people, although sadly we haven't seen enough of that in the last 9 months or so, during which Republican state legislatures have been passing restrictive voting laws left and right.
So, in other words, a state where you basically it's 50-50. If you 12 out of 16, it makes it what 75-30.
Yeah, I mean it's you got to give them credit. It's a devious gerrymander, and it's they could not possibly have drawn the lines in a way that better serve the interests of the Republican Party.
Well, but Governor Kasich is obviously, I mean, he's a Fox News commentator, a very partisan Republican activist, isn't he?
That's right, but I'm not sure how much exactly he's been directly involved in the process, but the Republican Party is clearly calling the shots here and has created a map. By the way, they dropped it on Tuesday of last week, and the House committee voted it out the next day in an effort to have as little meaningful public comment on it as possible. I mean, it was about as atrocious a process as you could imagine, and we can see why now that we've had some time to review the map. I mean, it is an egregious gerrymander.
Mm-hmm. And then, and because of their compressing all the Democrats four out of the 16.
Yeah.
You've got Marcy Kaptur running against Kucinich. Is that?
That's right. Yeah.
Well, now, of course, a lot of our listeners will remember Daniel Takagi, how 2004 ended. Right. That it was Kedu in Ohio, wasn't it?
And there were a ton of voting problems here. Of course, at the time, our Secretary of State was a Republican, Ken Blackwell, who made a number of questionable and highly contested decisions, such as decisions having to do with provisional ballots, whether they'd be counted, as well as the most controversial decision was probably one where he required that registration forms be on at least 80-pound paperweights in order to be accepted. Under pressure, he ultimately rescinded that directive. But there were a lot of shenanigans, at least surrounding Ohio's election. You know, I think the margin was large enough, over 100,000 votes, that it was pretty clear that, in my opinion at least, that George W. Bush won Ohio, notwithstanding these problems. But it did not give the public much confidence that the result here in Ohio was on the up and up.
And the new Secretary of State, John Husted, he's a Republican too, right?
He is, and I have to give Secretary of State Husted some credit for opposing the photo ID bill that the Republicans in the state legislature proposed. I think that really turned the tide, and his opposition is a big part of the reason why the Ohio legislature has not, at least not yet, enacted a very restrictive government-issued photo ID bill. I mean, he's certainly, Secretary State Husted has advocated some things that I don't agree with, but I think when Republicans actually do the right thing and stand up to their own party in opposition to these vote suppression bills, we ought to give them some credit.
Well, I thank you for joining us here today, Daniel Takagi.
Thank you so much for having me, and it's been a pleasure.
Well, thank you. Again, I've been speaking with Daniel Takagi, who's a professor of law at Ohio State University's Moritz College of Law and a senior fellow at the election law at Moritz. He recently was a visiting professor of law at Harvard Law School. His area of expertise includes election law, civil rights, and federal courts. We're going to be taking a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about how the state of Pennsylvania's Republican legislature and governor plan to change the electoral college rules in that state.